You're listening to the Clutter Fairy Weekly, a weekly webcast and podcast brought to you by the Clutter Fairy in Houston, Texas. If you'd like to participate in one of our live webcasts, please visit cfhou.com/weekly. You'll find a calendar of upcoming webcasts, as well as instructions for joining the Zoom meeting via the app or by phone. We'd love to see you. That URL again is cfhou.com/weekly. Now here's the weekly episode. Enjoy.
Hi, Clutter Fairy fans. This is the Clutter Fairy Weekly for October 11th, 2022. I'm your co-host, Ed Gumnick, and I'm speaking with Gail Goddard, certified professional organizer and owner of the Clutter Fairy in Houston, Texas.
Hi, everybody. The Clutter Fairy Weekly is the webcast and podcast that digs deep into the clutter that piles up between you and the life you want to be living. We explore the habits and behaviors that lead to clutter, and we suggest strategies to slow the accumulation, reduce the collection, and comfortably manage the stuff we decide to keep.
If you're new to our Zoom meeting, we want to let you know that you can share your comments and questions via the chat, and I'll try to make sure Gail gets to them before we move on to another topic. You can also use the raise hand feature to let us know if you'd like to make a comment or ask a question yourself via audio or video. We're also streaming the webcast live on Facebook, so you can share your questions and comments there, and I'll relay them to Gail. We're going to start as usual by recapping last week's weekly tittle, which was called The Five Commandments. The assignment was to draft a list of commandments that you'd like to follow as you make choices about what you acquire, keep, or let go in your decluttering efforts. We'd love to hear from our participants in Zoom and on Facebook. Who came up with some commandments this week? Please let us know in the comments. Dawn, a frequent participant in our Zoom meetings, and in fact, she is here today, shared her five commandments. It's a little bit long, so I'm only going to read Dawn's preamble and two commandments. Here goes. The overarching umbrella commandment: I shall continue to live according to behaviors which promote the physical and emotional well-being of myself and my household, my husband, as well as those who may enter our home to visit. Translation: I ain't ever going back to my decluttered and disorganized ways. The proverbial line has been drawn in the imaginary sand. And then here are two of Dawn's specific commandments. Number one: I shall take care of anything brought into the home. For example, shopping trips, I accept something someone gives me, getting mail, in a daily time frame. For example, groceries will be immediately put away, mail will be opened, sorted, and appropriately addressed, and trips to Kohl's means taking off the tags and putting the items in their assigned spots.
Yes, it does.
Number five, I will live a life of peace, personal and relational, beauty, surroundings, both personal style as well as there being no clutter, and fulfillment, accomplishing goals and building relationships.
What I love about Dawn's commandments is how all encompassing they are. The rest of them cover all parts of her life. Over the five commandments that she made, she really addressed all aspects of her life and created a vision with goals of where and who she wants to be. Even if she falters on a commandment one day, she can still do the others. She can always be working on some part of her list and still be moving towards her goals. It's always about progress, not perfection. And if she's striving towards these ideas in some way every day, she's working on her own behalf to get where she wants to go. She really embraced our concept here, and I think it's an awesome example of where you can go with it. Thanks so much for sharing it with us, Dawn. We really appreciated it.
We sure did. It was really good. Okay. I think we should get right onto our main topic. It's a lot to cover. So in the last four episodes, we've explored our relationships with belongings from several different perspectives: our idea of a good life, emotional responses, habits and behaviors, and last week, ethical principles related to stuff. Today, we're going to review the elements of the personal philosophy of decluttering and offer practical tools to clarify decision-making.
In the first episode of the series, we introduced the idea that living the life you love is about living authentically. That is, living in a way that's true to your values and your principles, your beliefs, and tastes. The stuff that occupies your space should be authentic too, meaning it should be a genuine expression of who you are, what you love and value, and what you want to be, have, or do. We spent the next three sessions exploring different aspects of our relationship with stuff. And the last 4 weeks have been a sort of self-analysis, right? With the goal of increasing our awareness of our relationship to stuff, to get a clearer picture of the life we want, and ultimately to be able to make sure that what we have is in line with who we are and what we value. So today we're going to revisit all the things we've talked about in this series and look for ways to apply what we've learned in order to reduce the clutter coming in and deal better with the stuff we already own. We're going to return to the subject of algorithms again. When we talk about algorithms, we mean simple rules of thumb to invoke or probing questions that we can ask ourselves to simplify and clarify the decision-making process we apply to stuff. So we're going to briefly recap the ideas that we covered recently and suggest some sample questions and algorithms that might emerge based on that self-analysis you've been doing over the last few weeks. So week one was about the life that you love. The first area we covered was your idea of what a good life is, your picture of the life that you want to be living. We talked about reflecting on your values, the roles that you fulfill in your life, your goals and principles, your talents, as well as your tastes and preferences. Here's how Janice described the life she loves in response to this week's survey. Entering my home and not having my stomach and jaw clench when I think of all the things I have to tidy up, because I've lessened the volume and purged the excess. Having my valued things in nice placement with honor and respect. Having my home reflect the current me, not the someday me. So how could Janice apply this statement about her idea of the good life as she's going about it? As she's shopping for things that she needs, Janet might keep in mind an algorithm such as any of these. Does this item deserve a place of honor and respect in my home? Is this thing a good reflection of who I am right now? Is buying this item consistent with my goal of reducing the volume of stuff in my home and purging my excess? And depending on your personal definition of a good life, you might ask, does this thing match the look I want in my house? Does it go with my decor, my color scheme, or my current style of clothing? Does this item support the life I want to be living? For example, if you've decided that you want to spend more time exercising or cooking, would another decorative item really support that goal? As Janice continues her project of decluttering, she might ask, does this thing I've discovered in the closet reflect who I am now? And does it deserve a place of honor and respect instead of hiding in the back of the closet? Think about your idea of a good life. And as you work through the decluttering process, keep asking yourself, does this thing that I've unearthed still have anything to do with the life that I want to be living? Does it reflect my values and goals, my role as a mother or a spouse, professional, or whatever role you cherish? To what extent is this item a reflection of who I am and want to be? Week two, we talked about positive and negative emotions, and we encouraged you to reflect on which emotions are driving or influencing your tendencies to bring in too much, to keep too much, or to experience difficulty in letting things go. In this week's survey, we asked our audience to name a positive emotion or a positive emotion or emotional state that you hope or expect to experience in your successfully decluttered and organized home. And in response to this question, Laura answered, pride. My home is clear of clutter and unnecessary stuff. My home is spacious and welcoming. My home is interesting and colorful and fun. I like to have friends over. Really love that vision, that positive emotion about the house. I thought that was a great one. If you have a vision like Laura's, as you're considering whether or not to add something to your home, you might ask, is this item necessary? Will this thing be a good fit for my spacious, welcoming home? Does it qualify as interesting, colorful, or fun? In other words, does it support the way that I want to feel in my home? Depending on what you'd like your home to feel like, you might ask, do I like this thing just because I like the atmosphere in the store or the lovely display or the cool packaging? Is my emotional reaction to this thing a true reflection of how it would feel to see it every day in my home? As Laura's working to get her home clear of clutter, she might ask herself, does this item support the feeling of a spacious, welcoming place that I want to experience? Does this thing still meet my standards of making my place interesting, colorful, and fun? I love that I love that parameter of it needs to make my space be interesting, colorful, and fun. That's a very happy place to stand. Really like it. Week three was about habits and behaviors, and we looked at habits that stand in opposition to our idea of good life. We talked about trying to identify the unconscious things we do to degrade our environments. We suggested ways to cultivate small habits, daily practices, and new routines to support your dream of an organized space. Our survey this week asked our audience to describe a habit that you'd like to cultivate to bring your home closer to your vision of how you want to live. And Joe responded, "I want to continue decluttering things that take up my time needlessly and cultivate a simpler life where I can enjoy being in the moment," which is a wonderful vision, I thought. So as Joe's running her shopping errand, she might ask herself these questions. How much time will it take to own and maintain this item? How much of her valuable time that she doesn't want to be wasting needlessly? And is this thing consistent with the simpler life I want to cultivate? If you want a simpler life, the idea of adding always requires extra thoughtfulness, because adding never makes things simpler. So you really have to filter for that hard. Nancy had this to say in response to the survey. "I'd like to stop the influx of paper and packaging and all the stuff that I did not request." So an algorithm that Joe might use while shopping would be, "I like to go in this store, but will shopping here help me cultivate a simpler life? That's a cool item in Amazon. Do I want to spend my time taking care of it? Would I buy this stuff if it was regular price?" And an algorithm Nancy might use in the house is, "I'd rather settle into the couch after I come home, but I need to sort today's mail first, so I'm not adding any unnecessary paper to my home. And to incorporate this item that has come to my house, I need to process all the packaging out to the trash and recycling as soon as I open the package." The fourth week, we talked about ethical and environmental questions. And we talked about bringing ethical issues and environmental concerns into the decisions that we make about what to bring into our lives, what to keep, and what to let go. So our survey this week asked you to list an ethical, social, or environmental value or issue to which you'd like to give greater weight in your choices about what to accept, buy, keep, give away, donate, recycle, discard. And Sarah responded, "Between a tight budget and environmental concerns, I get most things secondhand when I can. I donate most things, and I also belong to a buy nothing group. The shift is more on not accepting things that family and friends are looking to offload." So based on the priorities she set, we can imagine a whole bunch of algorithms that Sarah could use to guide her when she realizes there's something she needs to go get. So does this item fit her budget? Does it fit my budget? Is there a secondhand alternative to buying this item new at the thrift store? It sounds like that's a choice that she makes pretty often. Have I checked my buy nothing group or asked other members whether they might have this item available? And algorithms that Sarah might use in the house: I'm ready to let this go, so I should donate it or post it to buy nothing group this week. And in response to friends and family trying to offload their stuff, thanks for the offer of your free item, but I've got enough of that already at home. Please offer it to someone else who might need it. You can always deflect someone who is trying to offload their clutter to you, which, you know, on the one hand, they're trying to be helpful, but on the other hand, they're trying to make their clutter problem go away as well. So anybody that's trying to give you something for free, you can say, "Thank you so much. I already have that. I've already got one of those. I've already got too many of that. That doesn't work for me. Thank you. Let's offer to somebody else who might use it." It's always a good answer to somebody who's trying to give their stuff away.
Dawn asked, "What is a buy nothing group?"
So they exist on Facebook, and I imagine somewhere else as well. They're usually locally based in an area, and the idea is that you go on to Facebook and say in this buy nothing group that's locally around where you live, "I have this object. Does anybody need it?" And people go in and then you give it away for free to them. And people go in and say, I'm looking for, or I have a need of this particular item, to see if anybody in the group has something that they can loan them or give them to solve their problem. And so it's sort of a free exchange group that people set up, that in, and you do it locally so that it's not hard to get to the items. You know, it's not hard to go pick. You don't have to go to another city to get something. It's all close around you. And so they tend to be sort of neighborhood area based. Exactly. And you can just say, I need one of these. Does anybody have one? Or I have this stuff. Does anybody need it? And then you just go through, you agree that there's no money exchanged, and you go through the process of exchanging everything for free. And so it's a way to put things out there that other people might use and see if they need them.
And if you don't use Facebook or don't, you know, have gotten away from Facebook, you could also look at freecycle.org, which
is a similar concept. Exactly.
Similar idea. It's a clearinghouse locally based for things people are asking for and things people need.
Yeah. They're just trying to create a platform in which everyone can agree, we're going to exchange for free. We're not trying to sell. We're just trying to give this useful item off to somebody that needs the use right now. And so you can go and search in Facebook for a Buy Nothing group in your area. If you search on Buy Nothing group, they will certainly pop up ones that are close to you anyway. Like the algorithm for your Facebook will filter for where you are. So you should get ones that are generally in your area.
On the subject of last week's tittle, Deborah shared, my main commandment when shopping is that if it's not a clear yes, it's a clear no. And I have to have an exit plan for what will happen to the item when it no longer serves me. How will I environmentally dispose of this item?
See, that's a clever thing to do. The idea that you think about, I'm going to take it in, but there's going to be a point where I also have to let it go. And how will I, if you think about that as you're getting ready to buy it, and looking at it and thinking disposing of this is going to be a pain in the whatever, maybe it's not the one to take home, right? So it's a good thing to think about it up front and recognize that we do go through, we use stuff for a while, and then there's some point where it's not useful anymore. We're never going to use anything endlessly. And so how are we going to go about the process of getting rid of it at the other end? Which is great. It's good focus to have up front.
Several people mentioned in responses to the question about ethical concerns about making different choices as they're shopping. You know, like if there's a version of the thing you want that has a lot of packaging and a version that has less packaging, to choose the less packaging. For example, you can buy these, you know, those bags of big plastic bags full of little plastic bags of snack treats, you know?
Yeah.
Little bags of pretzels and potato chips and such.
Yeah. And it's lunch size.
One giant plastic bag and 15 or 20 little plastic bags, an awful lot of packaging. And I used to get those, but then, you know, thinking about all the plastic that went into it, now I just sort of figure if you have an occasion where you only want to take a few with you, just pour them into a reusable container of some kind from one big bag.
I mean, and those originated to be helpful for parents making lunches for kids.
Right.
And it sort of evolved into a convenience thing and a portion control thing, but you can accomplish that with less packaging yourself if you just, you know, make use of the storage containers that you have and buy a regular size one and divvy it up yourself if you want to do portion control. So there's an alternative that requires less packaging. Exactly.
Joyce said, I'm learning about having an exit plan. I tend to give away the excess and old before I buy something new. Most of the time it works.
Good job. That's good. Clearing the space for the next thing up front. That's a good way to look at it. And it helps you realize you give stuff away and then you can pause a minute and decide if it's replaceable. Does it have to be replaced? Can it be replaced with something better? If you just give yourself a thought for a minute okay, so I've been doing it this way, but how could I shake this up and do it a different way and maybe have it be easier, better, cheaper, less environmental impact, more in line with what I think is important. It's hard to look, have fresh eyes to look at what you've done a million times over and over again without thinking.
Yeah.
But you know, when you run out of something, then you can ask yourself, is this really still work for me? I don't want to just go and replace it automatically. Can I stop? Can I use that as a trigger point to stop and think about, I've been buying this, let me think through whether it still works or there's an alternative that's better.
Okay. Dawn of the Commandments said, in the past month or so, I've noticed a change, that of picking things up and putting them where they're supposed to be, and is becoming second nature. So it's not such a big deal. Makes me feel more peaceful. And there's no big ugh of, I certainly need to clean things up.
Right. That whole idea of resetting stuff on a regular basis is how you don't have an endlessly huge project to deal with all the time. And it is that little habit of, you deal with it, you go put it away, you deal with it, you go put it away, you deal with it, you go put it away. And so that you're spending, you know, 3 minutes several times during the day instead of 3 hours on Saturday resetting everything. And so it's, you know, it's worth it. It's worth it to do it in little increments, because the little increments are much less annoying than the 3 hours on Saturday.
M said, when my friends and I offer each other items, we also agree that the item can be passed on if it doesn't work out.
That's super important. And I know that sometimes what happens is somebody that's important to you, your parents, your grandparents, someone who is special to you in your life, wants to give you something. And really what they're saying to you is, this is particularly true in my older clients, I don't have the physical capacity to get it out of the house. I need someone to carry it for me. And how I'm making that okay is that I'm giving it to my friend, my grandchild, my, you know, relative who is younger and more hardy and hale. I'm giving it to them to go manage, because I don't have the bandwidth or the wherewithal to do it anymore. And so they're offering it under the guise of, I want to give you something, but you're also serving as the vehicle to get it out of the house for them, because they're not that mobile, or it's too hard for them to carry, or they don't have the ability to manage that task list and go and dispose of it themselves. And so sometimes you have to say, oh, thank you so much, really appreciate that, knowing full well that you have no intention of doing anything with it. You're going to go and finish the chore for them and donate it. But you can just say, oh, sure, I'll take that. No problem. I can find somebody that needs it. And then you take it out of the house and deal with it how you will. Don't let it go into your house. Let it go to wherever you want to donate it instead.
We had a lot of really great responses in the survey to questions about what has shifted in people's thinking. And so I'd like to share a few of those and get your responses. M said, joyous, this was on a positive emotion or emotional state that you hope or expect to experience in your successfully decluttered and organized home. And M said, joyous energy. Previously, I expected relief, but I recently experienced the energy that a small, clean, and decluttered area gave me.
Oh, isn't that exciting, right? I mean, you don't realize how being in that space weighs you down and diverts your thoughts and keeps you all focused on feeling bad about it. And then when you clear it up and it's pleasant to look at and you feel good about it, how released you are and how much energy you get back when you're not spending it on trying not to feel bad and trying not to notice, you know, when you're doing that whole la 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 thing where you're trying to, I don't see that. And you don't realize how much energy you're putting into that until you no longer have to do that anymore. And then you get all that energy back for something else. And how great that you've experienced that. That is awesome. Love it.
We also got a lot of people expressed really strong emotions about new thinking on climate change or environmental concerns. Darlene said, climate change. In recent weeks, I've asked myself to look again at small steps it may be possible for me to take to get more green in my habits. And
that's
we heard that
a good shift.
We heard that from a lot of people. I don't think we especially harped on that. That's just, I think, part of the zeitgeist now.
Some of the evolution that came with the discussion. Yeah. Cool. That's always been a good thing.
Gabrielle shared clear, bright, and light, describing the vision for my home. This includes my favorite color scheme, as well as my wish to lose even more burden of clutter. It just weighs me down.
What a great description.
Greetings from Hamburg.
Oh, hi. How are you doing? Thanks for joining us in your evening out there in Hamburg. I appreciate it. That's lovely, though. I mean, just the idea of, you feel how it feels different when you think about, I want my house to be clear and light. You know, it just changes how you feel as you think about that as your goal. And aiming for that positive feeling and that light feeling and that comfortable feeling as you're dealing with the stuff that weighs you down and makes you uncomfortable and is annoying, that whole everything you got to clean up. But reminding yourself that you want it to be clear and light and that's the goal here. And if you can keep that vision in your head, it makes the work that you're doing have a purpose and be valuable beyond the momentary irritation that you're in of having to work on it. And I have to tell you, so for the 3 weeks that I was off sick and I was in my house and I couldn't do anything, I had no energy and I was trying. The first part of it, you're just like unconscious. You just feel so bad. You can't even think about your life. But the second half, I was wanting to return to my life and I still didn't have the energy. And when I finally got to go and work 2 days in a row with a full client, like two people a day, and interact and help them work on their stuff and get feedback from people about, oh, this makes me so happy. And I really love the results. It was like, oh my God, this is why, you know, I love my job so much because I take places that look chaotic and I make them light and clear. And I get the joy out of seeing the transformation just as much as the client does. And that feeds me just as much as it does the client. And so, you know, being at home for 3 weeks doing nothing did not help my mental state at all. And I was so relieved when I could finally go and be with people and work on, let's make that chaos into something calm and peaceful and clear and have the relief of that new clean space and what it feels like to people and what it feels like to me. It was so great to be able to go back to it.
Excellent. Here's another good answer to list the question about an ethical, social, or environmental value or issue. Amanda said, make more mindful purchases to avoid creating trash. No more making excuses for clothing that's perfect except for one thing. Isn't that great?
That is great because we all do that, man. We all were like, this outfit would be perfect except the button. I don't like this button. It's like, okay, then you're never going to pick it. It's never going to come out of the closet and you just need to let it go, right? You just need to move it along. Only keep the ones that are actually perfect for you.
Lynn shared, here's her ethical, social, environmental value or issue. Quality over quantity. Respect the limits of the containers that house my stuff. That's a good one.
That's a very good one.
Buy used rather than new when possible.
Excellent.
Make do with what I already have before bringing new things into the house. Give unwanted excess to others.
Those are all great goals.
That's great. That's almost a five commandments right there.
There you go. And those are all going to help you have a more peaceful house, right? It's all going to be more comfortable if you can follow those goals in terms of editing. And the biggest one is don't outstrip your container. Like once you decide that here's where I'm putting I mean, this is how you end up drowning in grocery bags, right? You don't say, okay, the container holds this much, and when it's full, I can stop keeping them. If you just keep adding plastic bags to wherever you can stash them, you will eventually be drowning in plastic bags because you didn't set and respect a container to hold it. And unless you have some really crazy stuff going on in your life, I'm pretty sure you don't need an endless supply of grocery bags. Everyone has more grocery bags than they need or have a facility to use. And so coming up with a strategy for that instead of I stash plastic bags is great. Anything that you can do to make that work better for you, you're just going to save yourself some hassle down the line.
We had a question about whether the survey results are posted anywhere, and at present they are not. At some point I would like to do that, but we have to remove the answers of anyone who said that they did not want their answers to be shared. So there's some cleanup involved.
We have to do some filtering.
They will be posted eventually. Here's another. I wanted to share this answer from Millie on the ethical, social, or environmental value question. She said, I would like to use everything I keep. I'm too old to be keeping stuff for what if. If I didn't need it during the pandemic, I probably don't need it.
I love that.
there's a filter that a lot of us could probably apply.
Right. If it didn't become necessary when we were trapped in our homes and we couldn't go to the store and we didn't suddenly need that thing because, you know, the apocalypse had come and we were seriously disrupted. Our lives were very disrupted. And if that didn't spawn a use for the things in your house, then you probably really don't need it. And you're not going to come up short of it one day. It's going to be okay. But I particularly like she's relating her age to, I'm too old to worry about what if at this point.
Right.
And I think that is awesome. But you don't have to be old to have that mindset. It's like, you know, I just don't need to prep for an endless set of negative possibilities. I can have my life. I can have what I need. I can supply it in reasonable amount, and I don't need to be stockpiling against all disasters everywhere. And I think there are people that are most comfortable living in that space. Emotionally, they worry about all the things that might happen that are terrible, and they stay in a place of fear about it. And I would just encourage you to do what you can to make yourself more comfortable and address that sense of fear that you have so that you don't have to be surrounded by the results of your fear of bad things happening, because that's how you end up buried under stuff. And I would rather that you felt more comfortable in your space and you felt more at ease. And if you can reach out and get some help to talk about what fears are driving your decisions, then maybe you can shift your environment around how you live that way. Just an idea. I don't want you to live in fear, and I don't want you to surround yourself with stuff because of fear. And however you can make that easier for yourself would be awesome. We would wish it for you.
Brigitte shared, you saying it's only a small amount of joy when you buy something shook me awake. And guess what? Giving things away gives endless joy.
Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, there is that temporary thrill of, I just got something new and isn't it awesome? And, you know, I buy beads and I think buying beads is fun in the moment and it's awesome. And it's not an endless source of joy. I go and play with the beads and that's fun, but it's a temporary emotion like everything else. And so great for you to shift your perspective around that. And I hope it helps you filter and your contents and get your home how you want it. That's awesome. I saw somebody that asked, it went by, I think they were asking generally how many people answer the surveys. And we've mostly had pretty close to 100 people every week answering the survey. So
yeah, it's been between
really varied answers.
I think it's been between, lowest was maybe about 65 and the highest was 100 and I'm not sure, 115 or 120, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
On that note, we should talk just a little bit about, thank you. We want to thank everybody for the questions they gave us in the Ask Me Anything. Here's your chance to ask Gail and Ed any question you're curious about. And we are going to be making use of those in the coming months. We are planning to shift a little bit temporarily how we're organizing our shows and probably organize each show around three or four smaller topics instead of one big topic to slightly streamline the amount of preparation time I put in because we want to free up more of my time to edit the book that we are working on. We are sincerely working on the book for real now. And I have a lot of work to do on that and want to focus more, put more of my time into that.
We need to reduce his production time a little bit for a short time.
So starting probably in a couple of weeks, we will make our presentations will be somewhat less scripted. I mean, Gail will still have prepared some notes in on shorter topics, smaller topics, you know, that we usually do more in-depth preparation on a single larger topic. And we have loads and loads of topics that people have suggested that, you know, are worth 5 or 10 minutes, but not a whole show. And so we're going to finally get around to some of those because we're going to mine them a little bit. Yeah. We have a lot of things that people have asked about.
Ed puts so much time every week into managing, you know, my online presence and doing the show and everything that he does behind the scenes. You have no idea how many hours he puts in. So I need to allow him to get in there and take, we have so much written material. You have no idea. 15 years of us writing stuff. And so he is doing his best to edit and collate and create a cohesive whole out of that work. And we need to allow him time to focus on that so that the book can actually come to pass. So bear with us, and we're going to rely on you to participate more and ask me more questions and all that kind of stuff. So we got some goals. We want to make the book come out, and we're hoping that you'll help us and on the show so that he can spend less time making this show happen and a little bit more time making the book happen. And then we can return to our show strategy after he gets to finish.
Yeah. Lorraine commented, storing things I might need in case I might need it. Let it go. If I truly need it, I can go get another one. If I don't feel like going to go get it, then did I really need it in the first place?
And you can also go to a buy nothing group or a free cycle group and ask for it too. Like if you suddenly come up empty with something that you think you need, you can go looking for something for, you know, free or cheap or easy, and see if somebody else has one already. And it may, for them, it might be like, oh, thank God I get this clutter out of my house. And for you, it'll be, oh, this is the exact right thing I needed. Good job, Lorraine.
Linda shared, old gal here, my life experience has taught me that the most versatile and useful thing to save to help cope with major problems that arise is not stuff, but money in the form of an emergency fund.
There you go. That's financial planner advice right there. Making sure that you have a chunk of cash somewhere to solve a problem, to cope with the broken car, to fix the air conditioner that broke. Cause in Houston, that's gotta be fixed right away.
Oh my gosh.
And
yes.
You need that, you know, you need that little cache of cash in order to address those problems. And so what a great idea to recognize, I don't really need to add another thing to my house. I need to keep money in my emergency fund just in case I have a problem to address. And won't that be a relief when the car breaks and you can go and get it fixed? It's awesome. Thanks for the financial planner advice there. Appreciate it.
Right. Barbara said, it took a while and several attempts, but I have learned that I don't have to keep a supply of almost anything. I'm no longer in an environment of scarcity.
There you go. That sounds like a mental shift. That's awesome.
Well, and for, you know, for those of us who live in advanced countries and have, you know, a decent amount of income, we still carry around ideas about scarcity that got handed down to us. You know, even if we ourselves haven't experienced much scarcity or even any scarcity, for those who are
truly
that fortunate,
yeah,
we still carry around ideas about scarcity that go way back. You know, they're part of the family history, the family story.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's fine to, I mean, it's natural, I think, to be concerned. Maybe this won't, you know, maybe this, my present state won't go on forever, but you have to find ways to focus your thinking so that you don't let that concern make you keep, you know, make cripple you, mm-hmm. you know, in the stuff that you bury yourself in.
Yeah, exactly. And it is a shift, you know, if, particularly if it's something that you feel like you absorbed from your family when you were a kid, and kids don't have the ability to rationally, their brains aren't developed enough to rationally evaluate their parents' emotions. And so they just sort of take them on without any thought process, really. And we forget sometimes to circle back and go, is that really how I feel? Or is that a reflection of how my mom felt? Or is that a reflection of what it was like for my childhood, but is no longer true now because I grew up and became a successful person and I have, you know, the ability to take care of myself, whatever that looks like for you. And so, yes, my mother was born during the Depression. I see that. And there is some amount of, it's my theory about the Depression that the people that lived during the Depression, the adults that lived there during the Depression, they suffered, but they were also, they had their adult mentality to be able to, and emotional control to recognize that it wasn't a permanent state. And that as stressful and hard as it was, you know, things would shift someday. Like they had a better filter for their experience. The kids that grew up in the Depression were in that, I'm not mature. I don't know how to maturely evaluate my emotional state. I only understand that my parents are super distressed and everything's terrible and I'm hungry and we don't have anything. And so you have that little kid's response to the experience, and that anchors the that anchors your emotional response in a different way than I think filtering and having experience as an adult versus having experience as a kid. And it requires a lot more work to dig up your little kid response to something and recognize that you don't have to keep reacting like you did as a little kid to this situation. And you can mature that thought process now so that you don't have that, I'm a little kid and I have to panic to cope with the scarcity that's happening right now. As you know, we're all the people that are still talking about the Depression are people that were kids when the Depression happened. And if they never were able to process their emotions around that and sort of grow them up, they may still be dealing with it just like they did when they were, you know, six and they didn't have enough to eat. There, that's my logic.
Well, that little kid, that how you thought as a little kid is a really nice place to segue to talking about next week.
Okay.
We're in light of what we've discovered in recent weeks about who we are in relation to our stuff. Next week, we're going to shine a light on holiday preparations and consider whether we might do anything differently about the holiday this year. Maybe we will think a little differently about the holidays, having spent more time thinking about who we are and what we want.
Right. And filter the stuff through those new paradigms that you've been contemplating.
So we'll be back next week, Tuesday, October 18th at noon U.S. Central Time, live in Zoom, streaming on Facebook, for Less Work, More Peace, Uncluttered Home for the Holidays 2022.
It's time again for that thought.
Do you have a final thought?
I do.
Before we get on to our announcements?
You know I always have more to say.
It's true.
So we started off this series with the thought-provoking quotation from the Happy Philosopher blog. So I want to return to that now and remind you of what we started this series with. All diets fail unless we change our fundamental relationship with food. All exercise regimens fail unless we change our fundamental relationship with movement and activity. And decluttering will fail too unless we change our relationship with stuff. So we've examined our relationships with stuff from a bunch of different angles with the goal of raising the level of your self-awareness where stuff is concerned. This relationship is always changing, but our hope for you is that as we share ideas and work together on decluttering projects, your spaces will evolve into an ever better reflection of who you are and the life that you want to live. That's our hope for you.
Eclair said holidays already. And yeah, I'm afraid so, because part of what we want you to be thinking about is, you know, as you drag out the decorations at, you know, if you may
for
already have your Halloween
and
stuff
Christmas
out,
and
right, your fall
Hanukkah
stuff.
And yeah,
we want you to be thinking about it while you still have time to give stuff away to people who can use it this year. You know, it doesn't,
right?
Doesn't do any good to declutter your Christmas decorations and give
January.
Stuff away in January because yeah. Nobody wants it.
Right. But now would be a perfect time to go through the Halloween stuff and put a bunch of Halloween decorations up on a Buy Nothing group or take them to a local classroom or church or senior center and let them put them up right now. And so this is your window of opportunity to get in there in advance of when people would use them and find out, according to your new perception of what's important to you that you've been working on these last 4 weeks, how do those things impact you? Do you still want them? Does it make sense for your new vision? And if not, race them off to someone else and let someone else use them right now. That's what we're going to talk about.
Why don't you give us a tittle?
Okay, so here's the tittle. Asking the right questions. This week's tittle is to craft a set of algorithms or questions to apply to a decluttering project that's been keeping you stuck. So select a decluttering project that's clamoring for your attention, one that's making you insane. Reflecting on the elements of the personal philosophy of decluttering you've been contemplating recently, write down a few rules to apply or discriminating questions you'll ask yourself. Schedule an appointment to work on your project, like always. And as you work on the project, apply the rules and questions you've just written. If you find that you're not purging as much as you hoped, consider making your rules tougher or more restrictive. This is a very challenging assignment, so here's an example to help you get started. Suppose your project is to reduce the volume of office supplies you're keeping. Your algorithms might go like this. If you haven't used any of this type of item, for example, a number 10 envelope, in 6 months, it goes away. If you have a greater supply than you could reasonably use in a year, the excess goes away. If any item was purchased for a project that's finished or a process that you no longer use, it goes away. If any item is bulky and you foresee little use for it, for example, a box of 12 vinyl binders, it goes away. We hope that you can create some algorithms and tackle a new assignment. You've been spending a month thinking about this and developing your new vision and thought process. And so let's go use it on something that's been making you crazy and see if you can see a change in how you tackle a decluttering project around the house. And we wish you super good luck with this. And we will hope to see you next week about it. Can't wait to hear how it goes.
If you're watching this on YouTube, we would love for you to join us live. To get notifications about upcoming events, we invite you to join the meetup group by visiting cfhou.com/meetup.
Pause. And when you create your own profile, we can't edit it for you. So You have to know that you create a profile and you have to manage your own profile.
Oh, there. Yeah. That was in response to a question about changing the
changing somebody's address email address
to which some meetup notifications go, and you have to do that yourself through meetup.com. You can also follow us on Facebook by visiting cfhou.com/Facebook or join our mailing list by visiting cfhou.com/subscribe. We love to hear from you, so please keep your questions, comments, and topic suggestions coming on YouTube, Facebook, or anywhere that you find us. You can always reach us through our website at clutterfairyhouston.com.
Thanks, everybody. You know that we love to talk to you, and I'm so glad to be back and hanging out with everybody and not feeling like, you know, poo. So I'm thrilled to be here and glad you came back to join us, and we will see you next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye.